I should probably just say on the air so that you can hear what I just mentioned to our guest, Ian Cummins, who's here with his dad, Jim. And that was simply, I'm really proud of you and I really admire you for what you've done. And it's, you know, it's funny when somebody is not your own. You know, can you be proud of somebody you're not related to, or is that appropriate? I think you can still be proud. So here is the man who decided to walk from one edge of the country to the other coast. It all started in Virginia Beach, and I think near San Francisco, right? You went across the Golden State Bridge.
Yes, yes. Well, first off, I want to thank you for having me here today, Larry. I know it feels like yesterday that I talked to you for the first time. You were actually the first radio station that picked this story up. And I want to thank Ange Makita from UPMC Mercy Hospital, who put me in contact with you. Here I am now talking about it and looking back to it, reminiscing about it. And I started, yes, at Virginia Beach, March 1st, and ended August 30th on Ocean Beach, California in San Francisco.
Wow. Now, Ian Cummins is here, and let me introduce you to Ian's dad, too. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Larry.
Thank you for coming here, too. You've got to be awfully proud of your son.
Terrifically proud.
What was your thought, Jim, when Ian proposed this? Do you remember? Did you have any?
Oh, very clearly. We were pretty upset with him because we had indicated to him, hey, you know, we just lost a son. We don't want to lose another. Mm. So let's not even discuss this at the moment. But Ian was, when he puts his mind to do something, there's no stopping him. And shortly after that, we backed him 150% and incredibly proud of him.
And let's engage you here a little bit more with the backstory as you listen to Jim and Ian Cummins. Ian's brother, Ryan, Jim's son, committed suicide. He took his life a year ago this weekend. And I'm trying to remember, he's only about a year younger than you, right?
About 2.5. He was 20 years old when he passed away.
So he was 20, just a really bright, intelligent, interesting guy. I never met him, but reading about him, I feel like I know him. And it was after, you know, he had a mental illness, Ian decided to, you know, turn this fact of life. I don't even want to call it a tragedy. It is a tragedy, but it's an aspect of life.
It truly is. And so many individuals, over 30,000 people a year, I believe, to take their life. And these are just the ones who are counted for, take their life.
Yeah, it's very underreported and underdiscussed. Sure. I was on a college campus about a year ago on the evening a suicide took place. I had no idea. Response to it was so quiet, and then I never read anything about it or heard anything about it afterwards. Somebody who worked at the university had mentioned to me that it happened, and I said I was there that night. And it's important to talk and to let people know that things are out there.
I'm glad you brought that up, Larry, because it's discussion is so important. Discussion is the root of being able to spread awareness, being able to even end social stigma that surrounds suicide and mental illness. And I know the first time I was on the show, I talked a little bit about my brother and, you know, his struggle. He was diagnosed several times with different disorders, ranging from depression to bipolar to attention deficit disorder, and on several different types of medications. You know, doing this walk in honor of him, it was to initiate discussion about this, about people who may be suffering in silence, who may be diagnosed with mental illness, who won't come forward or who don't want to come forward out of fear of being judged or criticized. I know in life, if I was struggling with mental illness and I believed if I were to come forward and be judged or criticized for what I was battling with, I wouldn't want to come forward. And suddenly, you know, when that's the case, you feel alone. You feel like you're the only person out there who can relate with this. But doing this walk, I wanted to bring people, I wanted to share the story and show people that, you know, you're not alone. There are other people out there who struggle with this on a day-to-day basis, in and out. And, you know, sharing my brother's story, it was my hope that, you know, people can relate to this and come forward themselves and share their own stories to tell others as well.
And I'm sure you heard a lot of stories as you walked from coast to coast. I mean, first, a walk of this type in any context has got to be just a miraculous event. The towns you go through, the folks you meet, the things you see on your feet.
It truly is incredible. You see so much, and you really take for granted a lot of the simple things. You know, a gas station, for instance, an outhouse, like shaded trees in the desert, a body of water that you haven't seen in weeks. It's just these little things that you see out there that just you really... it really means so much, because I know when I came back, it's like around Pittsburgh, it's like, well, if I want to get a drink of water, I can just go right up the street. If I want to go get something to eat, I can go to one of 1,000 different places, if not more. You know, out in the middle of nowhere, it's you really got to look at what's around. There might be one place around for 50, 60 miles, so you really got to, you know, it getting to one of those places, it really just changes your whole outlook on resources and just, you know, having things readily available to you. It's a very interesting feeling, and I can't really describe it any more than that. But
did you feel vulnerable?
At times, very few times, actually. You know, I felt more vulnerable with Mother Nature than I did people. At first, I said, you know, I don't know who I'm going to meet out there. I don't know who's going to maybe have sinister intentions. And I only had a few, like, uneasy encounters. One of the encounters actually being with a number of stray dogs in West Virginia.
Wow.
They just seem to be everywhere in southwestern West Virginia. But once I started actually walking, you know, it shows if you can't take anything from the mission of the walk for mental health, I really did want to show people that, you know, humanity is good overall. You hear a lot about the negatives, but over 99% of the people that you meet are good people and will want to help you. I had a number of people stop, make sure I was okay, telling them what I was doing. Often they would leave me with money, food, or offer me a place to stay. So truly wonderful folks
Ian,
out there.
Ian Cummins is the voice of who you're hearing. Ian Walks America was his walk. When did that begin?
March the 1st.
Wow. Began in March and ended just about a month ago, I think, right?
August the 30th, so yeah. about 6 months of walking.
Yeah. If you've got a question regarding how he prepared for the walk, what it was like, or perhaps about his efforts to call attention to mental health and mental illness, feel free to phone us, 412-200-5975, 412-200-5975, or 888-752-7234. That's 888-SLB-RADIO. We would be happy to have you join us in the conversation. I want to turn to promotion of mental health in a minute, but I know, I mean, you had a couple days with blisters so severe, you ended up in the hospital. There's a lot to do. If you're listening and wondering, even if you are in great shape and ready to go, there's a lot to do to prepare for a walk like this, isn't there?
There is. And I mean, it started when I talked to you the first time. I was preparing, you know, I was doing some running, a couple miles every other day, trying to go to the gym. That failed pretty bad. I did not stick with that. But it's something that I realized that's like, you know, you can't really prepare yourself for walking over 20 miles a day unless you're actually walking 20 miles a day for 6 months. And towards the end of the walk, I was doing a lot of the times over 30 miles a day. But just preparing physically was one thing, but mentally preparing, that was difficult. And just thinking to myself, you know, what's going to happen? What else can I do? And knowing that, like, sitting there looking at, you know, this itinerary, this rough draft of what I was going to do, my route and stuff, I look at that and I realize it's like, geez, I don't know what else to do. I just have to do this. I can't plan for what's ahead. I can't plan for weather. I can't plan for what Mother Nature brings. I can't plan for people's driving patterns. So a lot of it, I had a lot of faith in just, you know, That, you know, my brother would be walking with me in this and keeping me safe.
Yeah, it probably really forces you to be very present without thinking much except what's happening at this particular moment in time, I would think. Jim, do you have other kids beyond Ryan and Ian?
No, those are our two.
So you had to be lonely. Suddenly you're missing both sons in your midst as one goes across the country with the spirit of Ryan along with him. Did you two manage to keep in touch most days?
Yeah, it was demanded by Mike Shallett. What's that? Chalik?
Oh, Michael Chalik of KDKA. Yeah,
he was the film guy.
Yeah, and he said you must keep in touch.
He demanded it. He said you call daily if possible, and that was one of the demands that we put on.
Well, they drove down a number of times too. I had a I started with a backpack, and then after about 2 weeks, I said, I'm not doing this backpack thing anymore. I bought myself a dolly. Actually, it was a recommendation by one of my good friend Brandon Bonwell, who lives back home, here in Pittsburgh. But he walked the first week with me through Virginia, and he said, why don't you get yourself maybe a dolly or something? And I said, that's a great idea. So I went to a hardware store in Blackstone, Virginia, bought this tank of a dolly that, you know, we're building a wall at home and this thing's still coming in handy. And this dolly, I pushed that all the way to Kansas, but my folks came out actually in Kansas with a cart that I had actually put together before I left. It was a jogging stroller, adapted it with solid rubber tires.
It looked like a jogging stroller.
It was.
I was wondering
about
that.
Yeah, so, and that actually took, the reason I switched over to that, and I thank my parents for coming out and dropping it off to me, was to be able to carry a lot of water through some of those desolate stretches. And, you know, the only downside of that was more people pulled over and made sure I didn't have a baby with me on the highway.
This is Ian Cummins. That's like putting the extra person in the seat to drive through the high occupancy vehicle lane. Like,
exactly.
Suddenly you get you get either sympathy or a lot of attention with somebody as they walk through. Is this a baby? Does this person need help?
Yeah.
Bob in Bowerstown has a question for you. Hi, Bob. You're on with Ian.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Larry. Ian, I just admire your perseverance and dedication to the cause of mental illness and your brother's memory. My question is, you kind of answered part of it when you talked about someone pulling over.
Yeah.
That's got to be one of the highlights of your trip. But I guess the scenic beauty of the country, is there any particular area that you thought was outstandingly beautiful? And did you have any tornadoes or other horrible thunderstorms?
That's a really great question. Well, thank you for your support, Bob. And I must say that there was a lot of the beauty was very unique to each state and every, you know, different regions. A lot of people look at Kansas, for instance, and actually no tornadoes. Did have a little bit of hail in Nevada, but that was the extent of some of the really severe weather. But like Kansas, for instance, we think of Kansas as being this pancake of a state, but actually it's I think the 20th flattest state, so it's a gradual uphill climb through Kansas into Colorado and the Rockies. But you know, the difference between western Kansas and eastern Kansas, it's so different. You have this beautiful you know, kind of almost high plains, rugged desert of the western part of the state, whereas like the east is pretty soft, rolling, grassy green hills. And honestly, western Kansas is truly beautiful. And you know, a lot of people might not think that when driving through, but you know, being on foot and being vulnerable and in that position, it's just truly beautiful. But also, I think one of the most beautiful places I was on the trip had to be central Utah. If you're ever going through Utah, I believe, I'm trying to think the road. I think it's 93, State Route. Is it State Route 93? I could be wrong on that. But it goes through Capitol Reef National Park. You go through Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, and it's just this two-lane road that goes on for over 120 miles through some of the most beautiful, it looks like the surface of Mars. That's just the best way I can put it, but truly spectacular. And just the canyons and the ruggedness and just the being out in the middle of just really, it seems, nowhere at times. It's beautiful. It really is.
Bob,
that was in central Utah that you really saw the canyons and.
Southeast to south central Utah. And once you get over towards the western part of the state, it gets to be more more mountainous for sure. And then once you get to the western part of central Utah, it actually levels out into like a salt pan and just a flat desert area as you build your way up into some of the mountain ranges in Nevada.
Bob, thanks. Thank you for calling. Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, that's about it. I wanted to thank you, Ian, for being willing to share on the radio too. That's a wonderful, courageous story. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Bob. Really appreciate it.
One of the things that happened, and I don't know if you anticipated this or not, but so many articles written about you as you went from town to town. Here you are walking in your brother Ryan's memory and doing this, as an act to help maintain his memory and also to call awareness to mental illness. And suddenly, dozens and dozens and dozens of media outlets, including newspapers and tiny towns and radio stations probably in towns, are picking up the bandwagon and become your megaphone. Did you expect it to happen like that?
You know, when KDK picked up the story, I was kind of blown away. And then as I walked, through the states, I truly was amazed with how many people caught on to this. And it, some people were really into just the walk portion, but, the majority were into the mission of it. And having people pick up this cause of spreading awareness for mental health and mental illness and suicide, it was just amazing. And, I'm only one person. I told myself that before I left. I said, we're going to look and see who I meet out there. We're going to see who I come in contact with. We're going to share this story with them, but I'm going to leave it up to the people that I meet to continue spreading this message, to continue talking about mental health, mental illness, making it something that isn't so taboo to talk about. And, the media picking it up and talking to me about this mission, talking to me about my brother, that did truly amplify, this message and get the point across to some of these small rural towns in our great country.
I keep forgetting we've got Jim sitting next to you too, your dad. I have to believe both of you still want to pick up the phone and talk to Ryan or want to tell him something or want to ask him a question. It probably never goes away. I mean, I still pick up the phone to call my mom, and it's, been at least 6 years since she passed. And
very true.
Can we talk about him a little bit?
Absolutely.
Because it's important to me that we do. My memory in talking with you before and also in reading about him, it's just this incredibly intelligent, quick, just interesting guy.
True. He truly was. He was a brilliant young man who was incredibly caring of others. He was a magnet for people that, suffered, in their brains. And he could relate to them so well and soothe them and help them. Unfortunately, he couldn't help himself.
Yeah, and let you add to that.
He hit it. He hit it right on. I know. It was so interesting to see Ryan interact with other people, interact with people who may be struggling with mental illness. I know when he was in Western Psychiatric for a while, he met a lot of folks that he became friends with, and was able to connect to and relate with even outside of the hospital. And that's why, I kind of looked at, how important discussion is, how important it is for people who may be suffering in silence to come forward and talk and be able to share their stories without fear of being judged or criticized. Because, when you find somebody to relate with, when you find somebody to connect with, it makes it so much easier to talk about. I know when I was walking and I met families who had lost loved ones to suicide, I found that sharing this story with them, being able to connect with them, it was therapeutic for me. But it also, it made the topic, made the subject a lot easier to discuss as a whole.
Yeah, I think, who knows how long it's going to take. I mean, we don't hide broken arms and legs. Yeah. We don't hide cancers. We don't hide even the most contagious of diseases. And here's something that's a fact of life. And I truly think that causing more awareness would lead to a reduction in injuries. You know, for every suicide, we've mentioned we hear so little. There are many suicides, many, and there's many more that we never even learn about or
hear
about.
That's true. You see a car accident, you think it might be an accident, you think it's an accident, and a lot of the times, you know, these people have taken their lives.
and then for every suicide, there may be as many as 50 failed attempts, which draw it causes injuries and heartbreak, yeah. And that's part of it as well.
And there is something I actually wanted to mention, Larry, if you don't mind. On the 18th of November, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, who we raised actually over about $10,000 for them on this walk, and as a result, they're going to be holding their first annual conference at the Sheraton in Station Square, dedicated solely to discussing the topic of suicide, discussing it in society today, discussing it as actually a disease process as opposed to looking at it as a result of specific diseases.
That's great.
So it's going to bring some attention to it.
I just had this thought as you were mentioning the money you raised. Wouldn't you just imagine, like, somebody says, all right, I'll pledge a dollar a mile, and then you come up and you go, okay, here's what I did.
I thought about that, but I really thought that because I was so determined to do this. I said, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it across, and if I do that, I'm going to feel really bad for the people who – well, I don't know. I would have felt terrible if I said that now you owe me $3,200.
No, that wouldn't be. This is Ian Cummins at the Saturday Light Brigade. And Haley is in Penn Hills, and Haley has a question for you. Hi, Haley.
Hello, Haley.
Hi. It's just very moving to hear about this story, and it's all too common. It's so sad, and so but yet so uplifting. My question is, in response to your walk and all that you have done to bring awareness to mental health, have you seen the mental health community galvanize in any actually material way? Because in other cities, there are programs such as dialectical behavioral therapy, such as trauma treatments of all kinds, especially on the West Coast, in D.C., yeah, in New York, in Florida, that we do not have in this city. And I don't know whether people are actually aware of this. And, for instance, DBT has saved many lives. That's a very common program to be in for suicidal ideation. So I'm just wondering what, for instance, Western Psych's response has been, what the mental health community in Pittsburgh actually in reality is willing to change.
That's a great question. And I actually, when I got home, I was in close contact, and still am, with our state representative, actually, Dan Miller, here in the Pittsburgh area. His office is over in Mount Lebanon, but he's been doing a lot to try to pass legislation and getting folks more support systems, more aid for people who may be suicidal, people who may be struggling with mental illness here in the Pittsburgh area. And he actually used the walk as a way to get legislation through, get legislation passed, and have support for getting this support that we do lack. But aside, you know, in light of, you know, what we lack, there is actually more support out there than we think. It's just finding that support. It's being able to take what we have and making it known to people who struggle, who may not know it exists. So, for instance, as I said before, I work closely with the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in southwestern Pennsylvania. And I know to get their message across, NAMI's mission is to, you know, find folks who do struggle the support that they are seeking. So people who don't know really where to go, don't really know what to do, NAMI will help them in finding that support and ways that they do that to make themselves known. I know we had the annual walk back in, I'm trying to think when that was. That was the beginning of October. And that's what we had thousands of people gather to show support for folks who struggle, just to get awareness across. NAMI also As I said before, we're going to be having a conference dedicated solely to suicide coming up here November the 18th at the Sheraton Station Square. But my goal is, I've been talking to NAMI, I'd really like to get people. We have a lot of folks coming together from, you know, Western Psych. There's going to be a lot of healthcare professionals there discussing suicide and mental illness. But what I'd really like is I'd like people who do struggle, people who do suffer in silence, to be able to attend these things, to be able to come here. I want this to be able to be reached out to people who actually really need it, you know, not just the healthcare professionals, but also the people who, you know, these healthcare professionals dedicate their lives in treating. So there's a couple things going on, and hopefully as I continue here in Pittsburgh spreading this message, I will learn a little bit more about that. So that's a great question. Thank you. I hope that my answer helped a little bit.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
You too.
Thank you for calling, Haley.
The Saturday Light Brigade, if you're just joining us this hour, we began a conversation in our last hour with Ian and Jim Cummins, son and father, respectively, about Ian Walks Across America, and that's the website. It's Ian Walks. Do I have,
yeah, it's ianwalksamerica.com.
Walks America. I'm putting it in a cross.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've gone to that site so many times. ianwalksamerica.com. And you can, some of the journal entries are down now because Ian's starting to compile a book that's going to talk about his walk. Before I go any further, Angie writes on, this is Angie, who originally brought you to our attention. She has a very pressing question that I'll share with you in a moment.
She always has good questions.
But just to sort of recap you on what we're talking about, is Ian's brother, Jim's son, took his own life a year ago this weekend. And Ian wanted to use this as a way to call attention to mental health. And Ian, you're a nurse. Is it med-surg or what is your...
I was, before I left, I was working in the medical intensive care unit over at Mercy. And actually, I just reapplied now, so I'll be getting a job back, not in the intensive care unit, but I'll be working in the emergency referral center. So we get a lot of behavioral health patients, detox patients coming in through the ER who are physically stable, will come to the emergency referral center to be assessed and placed to different units.
Wow. So that's really close. I mean, you already were pursuing nursing before your brother's illness. And, you know, talk about... sort of a right livelihood is a result of this.
It was, and I know it was. You know, I was really able to empathize with some folks. You know, with loss after Ryan passed, I did go back to work for about a month after he passed, before I left to do the walk. And you know, going back in that first day on the intensive care unit, seeing all these folks who you know are in like these physical crises. You know, struggling a lot of them for their lives. It gave me a whole new perspective, you know. And I think as a result, you know, sadly, you know, Ryan had to pass away, but I think his passing will make me a better nurse in the long run, truly.
Yeah. And, well, Ryan probably eased his pain in a way that only he could ease his pain. And yeah. I think one of the lessons learned is by calling more attention to the issue will help others. I mean, I think one of the best analogies for suicide I've ever heard is it's simply the ability to cope and resources that enable one to cope. And not to simplify it, but you simply lose the ability to cope often.
And I mean, it's you know, with Ryan's case, he had done so much for himself, trying to seek help, trying to seek, you know, something that could just make this feeling go away, make these feelings of despair just leave him. And with all the treatment that he sought, he still felt the same way. And he didn't know why that was. And, you know, suddenly he turned 20 last October, October 22nd, and I think when he turned 20, that was something that showed him that he's like, you know, look, I'm 20 years old now. Nothing's getting better for me. And that suddenly that hope for the future, that light that was always there for him, even in these dark times, snuffed itself out. And that was, you know, he didn't want that. And, you know, that goes for everybody who struggles with a mental illness. We often think people who struggle can just change this at their own convenience, can just, you know, get better, just snap of the fingers. You know, when somebody's sad, you know, some things that we feel like we should say is just like, oh, you know, just hang in there, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who struggle, I've come to realize, you know, they don't want to hear that. And because they think it's just like, you know, I don't want to feel this way. You know, Ryan would always say, he's like, you know, do you think I want to feel this way? If I could not feel this way, I would definitely do something about it. But I don't know what to do.
Well, and it's about as effective as if I were out on a dance floor somewhere and somebody said, come on, you know, just do the jitterbug. You can do it. And it's like, no, I can't. You know, you can't change behavior any more than you can suddenly turn somebody into an NFL quarterback or anything else. You know, it's all part of mental or physical health or in some cases biology.
Very true. Now,
Angie's hard-hitting question.
Oh, my.
This is a hard-hitting research question, and your dad,
no.
Jim, may know.
Putting
because,
me on the spot.
How many pairs of shoes? And she's assuming it's pairs. And I would even contend that perhaps it wasn't always pairs. But how many pairs of shoes did you go through on the walk?
I'm going to have to do my research for this one. But
you can give a rough answer.
I do have an interesting way to answer this. I could – tennis shoes, five pairs. Went through five pair of tennis shoes. But when I first started, I didn't use tennis shoes all the time. I stuck to boots and shoes that were supposed to be waterproof that ended up not being waterproof. And that's why I got trench foot in Kentucky. That's when I was hospitalized, as you had mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But five pairs of tennis shoes. I had the same pair of boots the whole way through, and they felt pretty broken in at the end. And I also had another pair of kind of waterproof hiking shoes. And so once I had that whole issue with my foot, I kind of looked at my whole foot care routine all over again. You know, I thought I was changing my socks enough. I thought I was doing everything right, but you know, there was something that I was doing that wasn't right. And so I needed something that was going to be more waterproof. And when it wasn't raining, I needed something that, you know, especially when I got out west further and the summer started coming on, I needed something that was going to breathe better as well to, you know, ventilate my feet. So I switched over to tennis shoes, and I didn't have all the weight on my back, so I didn't have to get anything that would absorb the impact of, you know, a backpack. So with the tennis shoes, they breathed great, and I was able to put in quite a few miles and keep my feet nice and happy.
Now, what we have to do is get the company that made the boots that went the long haul to have you endorse them and make a big donation.
That would be great. That's a good thought.
Not to think. If you're just joining us, Ian Cummins walked across America. IanWalksAmerica.com, starting at Virginia Beach at the Atlantic Ocean, across the Golden Gate Bridge, which symbolically was a great inclusion in the walk, and eventually with his feet in the Pacific Ocean, where he soon thereafter proposed to his fiancée.
Yes, and Megan is listening right now. So,
there were just a couple more things. If you have a question, we have another minute or two. If you want to ask anything of Ian, 412-200-5975. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. Thank you for doing it. It's really tremendous what Ian's done, and we wanted to be sure to talk with him about it. The first question, and it's one that is a little I just have to ask it. I mean, something that happened as you were walking, Robin Williams took his life, and what an incredible coincidence, but yes and no. I mean, there were probably lots of people that took their lives as you were walking, but
yeah,
he certainly brought suicide to national attention. But interestingly, while it's nice and respectful that we haven't heard his name much in the news since about a week after that, it's really an illustration, and that's why I wanted to be sure you were here this morning, of what happens, the what I like to sometimes call the national media slide projector.
Yeah.
Jim, your dad will remember these old slide projectors where you'd show a slide.
Absolutely.
And then you'd put in another slide, and it kicks the old one out.
Right.
I sometimes think we can only focus on one thing at a time. Today it's Ebola. One day it's Robin Williams' suicide. One day it's the Senate and the House. And you had, Robin in the spotlight for a minute. A week later, not a whole lot of conversation, which is why I think it's so important that this is not just a walk. This is a cause you're going to be dedicated to for your entire life.
Absolutely. And as I said, at the end of the walk, I put my feet in the Pacific and I said, this is only the beginning. You know, you don't have to walk across the country to spread awareness. You don't need to walk across the country to, take on the cause of mental health, mental illness, and suicide. You can do it, right at your home just by having the talk. If you know somebody you think may be struggling, be a pair of listening ears. Be a pair of ears that, isn't going to pass judgment or criticism on this person. Even if you don't have all the answers, you could save a life simply by listening to that person with an open mind. And it's interesting you brought Robin Williams' death up. I was actually in Western Nevada when that happened, and just about to go into California. I know I was in Carson City, and somebody, a reporter, had talked to me about it a little bit. But, his death, it's something that, we can bring a light to those who struggle now. There's nothing that's going to be able to bring him back or my brother, but using their passing as a way to, maybe bring others forward. I think we can definitely use, and ending that social stigma that says, only certain people are going to take their life, only certain people are suicidal. No, it doesn't matter what socioeconomics you are, it doesn't matter what color, race, gender, it doesn't matter. It can affect anyone.
Now, you can get additional information by going to ianwalksamerica.org, and then NAMI is the organization that has considerable resources available.
True.
What's the best way to get involved with them?
With NAMI, a great way, you can visit their website. They have a national page, which is NAMI. I believe it's just NAMI.org. But the Pennsylvania, if you're here in southwestern Pennsylvania listening, NAMI, N-A-M-I, southwestern PA, S-W-P-A. So NAMISWPA.org is their website. And also, another gentleman I've been in close contact with, Robert Regis. He's a gentleman. He talks openly about bipolar, his struggle with bipolar disorder, and he throws concerts all the time for organizations that try to better the field of mental health. So on November 16th at Jurgle's Rhythm Bar, I'm not sure. Actually, I'm trying to remember where that's at. But
that's in the North Hills.
North Hills. They'll be throwing a concert, and all the proceeds will benefit the National Alliance on Mental Illness. So, stop by, listen to some good music. Tickets are $12. And
Donny Iris is going to be there.
Yes.
Jennifer Secchi.
All right.
Yeah, Donny will be there. Yeah.
Donny. It's on one of the 100 Babcock Boulevards out in the North Hills. There's many of them, but it's on one of them.
You can come listen to some great music and support a great cause in the process. So.
Jim, anything else you'd like to add? I wish we, if it were up to me, we'd keep talking to you guys all morning. But
no, I really appreciate you supporting Ian. As he indicated, you were the first, and you broke him in. This kid is really, really, really
articulate.
I remember
I got up. The first time
he was
I got
so
on
nervous.
The radio, I got up at like an hour and a half early. I was like, oh my gosh, I've never done this before. Like, what am I going to expect? I don't know how to do a radio interview. I had all these papers in front of me, just like with all these like responses to certain questions. But it's, talking about this after so long, just being open about it, it comes naturally now. It's something that, I wish, everybody in society could speak about mental illness just in this fashion. Just, let it come naturally. Let it be something that, it's okay to talk about.
Well, let's keep in touch.
Definitely. I would love that.
By no means should the conversation end. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you,
Larry. Thank you, Larry. Really appreciate
today.
It.
And again, it's ianwalksamerica.com, ianwalksamerica.com. Simple to get to.